Anybody home?
What kind of party is this, anyway?
A very strange party, if you'll pardon the expression.
Radio General Erko.
Yes, sir, but that's not what's so peculiar.
Put it on the bridge speakers, Lieutenant.
Pay more attention.
DJ 7 L.
I thought it might be static, but not on every channel. Tend to sound like...
Holy Mountain Printing Podcast.
Demand an explanation!
Look at that one! Bigger than the rest! Look at...
Invasion by creatures from space confirmed. New York City may be their next objective.
Yes, stop.
And get out of here!
What is it?
I'm getting some very strange reports from Sea Bay, though.
In what way strange?
Holy Mountain Printing Podcast. Welcome to the Holy Mountain Printing Podcast.
All right, how's it going, everyone? Welcome to the Holy Mountain Printing Podcast. I'm Joel. I work here at Holy Mountain Printing. I haven't been on the podcast yet.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I haven't been on yet, and I'm the one's got to edit all this bullshit, all the audio files, and make you all sound beautiful and whatnot.
You're strictly behind the scenes.
Strictly behind the scenes. Now I'm coming outside of the scenes, but yeah. Today is a fucking amazing episode because we're gonna have Daniel Warren Johnson with us, and I think he's here now.
Hello.
Oh shit. He's here.
And my family, my daughter's laughing upstairs, so sorry about that. She's like having a great time, and it's not her bedtime just quite yet, so
oh man,
give it like 10 minutes and it'll all go away.
And of course I'm joined here with Sequoia today. How you doing, bud?
I'm all right, how are you?
I'm doing amazing. Today's been an interesting day for sure. But today we, like I said before, we have Daniel Warren Johnson.
Yeah, don't mess it up, bro.
I can't mess it up. I want to add, you know,
no like pressure.
Daniel Warren motherfucking Johnson. That's what I'm gonna call you. That's gonna be a mouthful every time we say your name, but
You know guys with three names, they mean business.
Oh, I don't fuck around with dudes with three names. I mean,
Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
I don't want any trouble, sir. I'm sorry for whatever I did, but I apologize for it. You know, there's authority with having three full fucking names.
Yeah.
And I think that very much shows. So kind of a weird story of how I learned about you, did a learning about you. Someone said, "Hey, this dude has your shirt on." And I was like, "Who? I don't know this guy." And then I looked, I was like, "Oh shit." And I bugged out because you got one of my Gunpla shirts.
Dude. Okay, so were you the one that designed that?
So that one was done by our artist Hugo Abercrombie Inc.
Okay.
I can't do much of good drawing. I'm not an illustrator. I do a lot of coloring stuff, but okay. I'll draw a very rough, embarrassing, you know how like there's really cool concept drawings like movies and shit and they're worth thousands of dollars.
Yeah,
mine
yep.
would be like I would have to pay you to take it and like give some type of value to it because they're just fucking utterly worthless.
Okay,
but he makes our visions reality. And that was one where there was just like, I would draw something and be like, all right, well, let's do this. And this is going to be destroyed. And I would send him like a model kit as a reference. I was like, see the, you know, the damage on here, the weathering and all this shit. And he'd be like, okay, I think I get it. You just want a fucked up robot on a t-shirt. I was like, no, no, dude, trust me. It's much more than that. So I'm very excited to see, that you got it. And I went down a rabbit hole of your Instagram, and okay. You have a lot of fucking amazing Gundam art.
Thanks, man.
Dude, it is, I saw the like the Easy Eight you did.
Oh yeah.
That thing was, I love 08th MS team, so that just fucking, I got ecstatic when I saw that.
I mean, I am by no means a Gundam like connoisseur. Like I love 8th MS team, and I love the new like Gundam the Origin manga. But other than that, I'm like, I build a few kits here and there, but mostly I just like Google image them and try and figure out what looks cool.
That's the great thing about it. I mean, even myself, I don't watch that many Gundam show. I'm sure right now everyone's going, what? How can you not watch that? But there's some like 00 I have no desire to watch, but I love how some of the suits look, and that's all I need. I'll get the kit and build it and you know, be done with that there. But the funnier part is when we had the, we did the first episode of Sequoia, you did it with Brockton with Matt Fraction.
Yeah.
And I brought up, I said, hey, do you guys know this Daniel Warren Johnson guy? And they went, who? Oh my God, what? He bought one of your shirts. I was like, yeah, we should talk to him. Let's get him on the podcast. That's awesome. So here we are. And Sequoia, you, I think you know more of his actual property work than I do.
Yes. I'm a fan of Murder Falcon.
Yes.
And see, that was one of those books that like my friends just kept haranguing me. Oh man, you got to read this. It is crazy. It's ridiculous. You got to read it. And I was like, Murder Falcon. That sounds ridiculous.
It sounds crazy. Badass.
It is badass.
Murder Falcon. Like, fuck yeah, dude. That's a great name. Yep.
It is.
It is a great name.
I can't wait to read it.
Yeah, man. Like, that it is the most one of the most epic, awesome, like just badass comics I've ever read. I have to thank my friends Arthur and Justin for recommending it to me, but it has so much heart to it. Thanks, and man. It's you know, such a touching love story. I mean, one for, you know, about someone dealing with a personal crisis and kind of triumphing over that, but then also just this love letter to heavy metal music and heavy metal culture, man. Like, where did that come from? Like, what inspired you to write and draw that?
Well, it all started with the name, honestly. So when I was trying to figure out what was going to come next after a project that I did called Extremity, you know, I really wanted to come out of the gun running, out of the gate running, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
Like
that. I suck what you're saying. Don't feel bad.
So I was trying to think of something cool and exciting that would be different than maybe a bit more of a, Extremity was more of kind of like a sci-fi fantasy kind of tropes thing, which is awesome. And I still love that stuff, but I just wanted to try and switch it up, but I didn't know what. And my brother actually he does roller derby out in Massachusetts, and he was trying to come up with a cool roller derby name because he had just made it onto the Mass Maelstrom team. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, I have some ideas, and he was texting me all of these names, and one of them was like Andrew Lloyd Shredder, and like Ticking Time Bomb was another one. And one of them was Murder Falcon, and I texted him back and I was like, bro, you can't use Murder Falcon because I'm taking that name.
That's mine now.
Exactly. And I basically took that name and I ran with it. I just thought, man, Murder Falcon, that's such a great name. There's no way that wouldn't make a great story. And so after a few days, I just knew that name existed in the world. I took it and I just thought, man, what if there was just like, because I play guitar. I've been playing since I was 11. I love shred music. I love metal.
Hell yeah.
And I also love the kind of like devil may care attitude of a lot of the 80s metal. And not so much like hair metal, but like stuff like Racer X and like Vinnie Moore. Like, it's ridiculous how many notes are being played and they just don't give a F.
Yeah, yeah. No one cares. They're just, yeah, that shit's fucking crazy.
Yeah, they just rip it. And, you know, they were coming from places where they were like, they had fallen in love with the Beatles and Van Halen, and they're like, okay, let's make songs like this, but just throw more notes in it.
Just make it way more complicated.
Yeah. So I was trying to think if I could take that music, which I love and has gotten me through a lot, and put it into like comic book visual form, what would that look like? And I was just thinking, man, what if there was a guitar that like summoned a mystical creature called Murder Falcon? And the better that you shredded on this guitar, the better that he would like fight evil.
Holy shit. So I haven't read or seen the premise of the book, because I've been kind of holding back to wait to kind of hear you describe it.
Okay.
And I'm going to go fucking buy it immediately after this.
Right on.
There's a guitar that summons, it's like a better JoJo season or some shit. Like,
so it does have a lot of that very anime manga setup. You know, it has that kind of vibe. And that's kind of what I was going for. Like, I liked that ridiculousness of it. And one of the goals of this, you know, comic was to be able to translate that visual excitement, like taking that visual excitement of comic books and channeling the power of like heavy metal through it. So that's all I will say. I mean, the elevator pitch is over, you know, and it works. You know, I would say to new people who are like possibly going to read it, it's called Murder Falcon. It's about a guy who finds a mystical guitar that when he plays it, it summons a mystical beast called Murder Falcon. The better that he shreds on this guitar, the better Murder Falcon fights evil. If you don't want to buy it now, then I don't know what to tell you. You know,
yeah. If you're not sold at this point, I don't know what you're doing out there. I don't know what you're reading where that's not interesting to you.
Well, my thing is, you know, everyone's got a lot of damn time on their hands. Yeah. I mean, might as well.
Now's the time to start reading comics and shit. I mean, I've been going down a rabbit hole of just like checking out weird like independent books that we bring into the store, and like, and then also, I mean, even with Bat Fraction, I never really read any of his stuff, but like listening to the podcast, like, fuck, I'm gonna check out this and this. I think
he's a talented writer.
A great way to like really find out some fucking cool shit. I think people may be sleeping on, or maybe I just don't know. You know, I'm so far integrated from this world, but yeah, dude, that sounds badass.
Dude, I won't lie, it's pretty badass.
It was really funny. Let me ask, like, I don't know if you're a gamer at all, but did you ever play the video game Brutal Legend?
I never did play Brutal Legend. I have friends who like it. I do play some video games. I will say that my colorist, Mike Spicer, you know, whenever we start a new project, I usually send him screen grabs of different properties or color kind of vibes of a like a video game or a movie that I will kind of be like trying to show him, like, hey, here's kind of the mood and the tone we're trying to emulate. And I just sent him a bunch of Marvel versus Capcom 2 screenshots, and I was like, this is basically the entirety of Murder Falcon.
Dude, holy shit. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, like that energy, man. I mean, it's just like reading it. It like so many things came to mind, like I said, the Brutal Legend video game, just because like I've never seen anyone with a comic book or anything else really kind of play upon the tropes and the mythology that, cause like I said, I'm not a big heavy metal guy, and like what heavy metal I do like is very specific in terms of era, but just the imagery and the mythology behind heavy metal music, like this just totally like elevated it, you know, like the whole thing with the mystical realm of the heavy, like that whole concept. Or like the gigantic hammer and anvil and all that. And like it's like, oh man, there's, you know, like, I think the first page when, Lord, I forgot the name of the main character and Murder Falcon.
Oh, Jake.
Yeah. And like they show up on the scene. I was like, oh my God, this reminds me of, what was the cartoon? Megas, XLR.
Yeah.
I mean, elements of Scott Pilgrim. I mean, like it just had such an energy to it. And I was like, God, I'm an idiot for not reading this sooner.
Dude, I feel like an idiot for not reading this, point blank. and I'm doing a podcast with fucking Daniel Warren motherfucking Johnson. That's his full legal
name.
That's
right.
You know?
Well, the nice thing is, like, while I was reading, I threw on the Bruticus SoundCloud, the soundtrack, and I had that playing in the background while I was reading it. But
a lot of ignorant riffs.
Still,
ignorant riffs are the best riffs.
It was kind of a nice soundtrack to have to go along with the book.
Right on.
You know, because I think that's important. Like, you know, because I always kind of wonder what kind of stuff people, when they write or draw comics, like, what were they listening to at that moment? I don't know what you were checking out
What were you listening to? what kind of metal? We've established that Sequoia is not too integrated to the metal world. I'm a huge fan of, fuck everything from, black metal to weird power metal with Christopher Lee on it, to grindcore, to, all kinds of crazy shit. What's kind of the stuff that you either do for inspiration or while you're writing? I know people have kind of weird rituals when they get into the mindset of starting a new project. What do you get into? Hopefully no weird, blood sacrifices or anything like that.
Watain.
Yeah, right. Okay, that makes sense.
To start, with the birth of the project, just the feelings that helped make it, it was so obviously influenced by music. Really, without Racer X, this book would not have existed. I'm a huge Paul Gilbert fan. I love his solo stuff now, but the Racer X stuff is something that really inspired me to, play the guitar, try and play the guitar better. And, it was just so much fun to listen to. Same thing with Van Halen. I'm a huge Van Halen fan. I always have been. I always will be. It's old school and everybody's heard it, but damn, there's a reason. It's like heavy metal Beatles. It's so good.
Yeah.
I really like metal that's not afraid to have fun. I love the dark stuff. And there is some of that in Murder Falcon, but it was mostly birthed by party metal. I don't know what you want to call that. A lot of thrash. There was one band that I was listening to a lot called Skull Fist. I don't know if you guys have heard of them.
I haven't, but it sounds like a great thrash band name, so I'm on board for it.
Yeah, they're partly thrash, partly the kind of that old school 80s metal vibe, but much faster. Highly recommend them a lot. Their second album is the best one. So without Skull Fist, this book would not have existed. And then, so that was kind of the vibe of the whole birthing of Murder Falcon. When it came to actually pulling the trigger on writing scripts and drawing, I do remember listening to a ton of Vinnie Moore, because there's no lyrics and it's just makes it easy to kind of zone out to, especially with there's so many notes, it just kind of washes over you and puts you in a special mood to write. Yeah. I was listening to a lot of sorry if I get this wrong. This is not metal oriented at all, but Johan Johansson, who did a lot of movie soundtracks.
Yeah.
They're really moody. And there's not a ton going on in them. There's orchestral swells and there's a few melodic elements that are repeating, but it's really great for kind of zoning and chilling. And then when it came to drawing, I was listening to a ton of friggin' Chemists while I drew this book.
Okay. Yeah.
Listened to a lot of Power Trip.
Okay.
Wow. I love
Power Trip. Yeah, that's kind of one extreme to the other.
I listen to everything.
Yeah. I think that's good because that you're obviously a very versatile artist. You do a lot of different stuff. And I think that just from the bands you listed, that also kind of shows in your taste as well. From 80s thrash metal to Chemist to Power Trip. That's a good little smorgasbord of bands.
Totally. A little bit as far as the darker stuff goes, I was listening to a lot of Horrendous. They're one of my favorite metal bands ever. And I'm trying to think what else. A lot of Bolt Thrower.
Hell yeah. I'm all about the Bolt. Which albums? Because people are going to ask.
I was listening to a lot, but Those Once Loyal was a big one.
Yeah. That and Realms of Chaos. Those are my go-tos. It puts you in a different kind of mindset too. It's either you're gonna play Warhammer or you're gonna draw something similar to that universe. I feel like it's just fucking aggressive.
How do you feel about is it Warmaster? That's the album, right? How do you feel about that one?
I'm more pertain to the older stuff. Warmaster, Realm of Chaos, and then up to I dabble in like Those Once Loyal and stuff like that, but mainly the first two, those are my go-to. Cause I just, that sound of just that fucking just rough eight, you know, just death metal sound, just like pure, like Obituary echo.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. I'm a kid of the 90s, so I didn't really get to grow up with that, but my dad, luckily enough, was like, hey, you should, you know, check out this band called Morbid Angel. I think you like it. I was like, fuck yeah, this is cool. You know,
that's awesome.
And yeah, that dude, that kind of inspiration and influence of music, it really shows in a lot of work too. But I think it's also cool that like you're able to have these to pull from, because there's also, I'm sure, a lot of artists out there that are trying to like, you know, trying to figure out what might work for them. And I think maybe just zoning out, listening to some music might just fucking help them out, especially right now. Cause I mean, I'm sure everyone's at home just listening to music and trying to start something if they don't have the ability to work right now. And we actually kind of touched on that. It's going to be a new renaissance of creativity, which is fucking awesome in a shitty situation.
I really hope so. I mean, I totally agree with you. I feel like, you know, establishing of this new normal, who knows how long it's going to last, but
yeah.
I know for me, like trying to make new things sometimes is really hard just because there's so much like mental energy being spent on like the stress of the situation right now. But when I can get out of my own head and into what I love, I have like a Pomodoro timer on my phone, which really helps. I'll set a timer and I'll just make myself focus on something creative just for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it really helps me like break out of the cycle of just continually thinking about, you know, coronavirus.
the dreaded C word. I've never heard of that before, of setting that timer to say, okay, I'm going to sit down, whether it's, you know, 5 minutes to an hour, and just hyper concentrate on doing something creative. And I think, I mean, shit, that's something I might try tonight, because I kind of get in that weird funk
I got a shout out to my buddy Adam, who like taught me this, because he is a really creative person who has like a full-time job that's not related to art in any way, shape or form, but
yeah,
he does a lot of visual work and, you know, tactile, like, you know, arts and crafts kind of thing. And I always thought, you know, when he got home, he would just like go straight to the craft table and start pounding shit out. But he was like, no, man, it's really hard for me. And then he shared with me this strategy, and he said, it has to be like a short amount of time, so that the back of your mind can be like, okay, this is only 5 minutes. I can do this for 5 minutes. And then by the time that 5 minutes is over, a lot of times you'll find yourself kind of in a groove. It's just a matter of like intentionally setting that timer, sitting down and doing something that, you know, maybe you're not totally used to doing, or something that maybe takes a little bit of setup. Like for me, I know like getting my Gundam shit all set up takes a long time for me, but once I'm in it, I'm in it.
Yeah, you're in the groove. And I think what that 5 minute timer is doing is really setting a routine for you that you're maybe not used to, but you're forcing yourself into it, so you're gonna get used to it. And exactly. I think a lot of people lost their routine. So they're used to coming home, cooking dinner, saying hi to the kids, and then going in their, you know, their hobby room or their comic room or whatever. And now everyone's like, well, fuck, I don't go to work. You know, it's a big disruption that has led to creative people being more creative, and then non-creatives being like, well, fuck, I can do some of the shit that I want now. You know, I don't do my 9-to-5 anymore.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because as a creative, I am now less creative than before this, because I'm so used, like my full-time job is making stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm so used to like turning off the world and, you know, making things at my desk. But with just the way that this, you know, it's affecting everybody. And since this is my job, it's been really hard for me to focus. And every day gets a little better, but it's been rough for me just personally. Like, it's much easier for me to zone out to like a video game or go running than it is to like draw a page, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Hopefully that'll change.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. And well, also, I guess I want to plug your YouTube channel, because you started up a YouTube channel, which is kind of fucking dope. And that's another thing too. We're seeing a lot of is like a lot of artists and stuff that didn't have the time to do I saw you did a live Q&A video. Like, I'm sure you probably didn't have the time to do that before, but now was that like something to help you? Did you kind of like get that burst of like inspiration from, you know, talking about, you know, your comics and your illustrations and writing and all that? Or was it something where it was it kind of stressful at first?
Well, it's something that I've been meaning to do for the longest time. I had been seeing this like big market gap in YouTube where there's like a ton of how-to videos and a ton of like, here's how you do this, here's step-by-step how to draw. But none of them were actually done by any like creatives in the actual comic book industry.
Oh, shit.
And that doesn't mean those videos are bad. It just, you know, I kind of have this little badge of like, oh, I work in the industry. And so it helps just a little bit with like, you know, being able to fill out that space of like professionalism.
Yeah.
So I was like, man, this is a perfect opportunity to do this, you know, during the coronavirus. So I basically started doing research as soon as I knew I was going to be locked down. I just did all this research on different cameras and different programs. I taught myself how to use Premiere. I started attacking it, and I'm really happy with how things have been going so far. I've gotten a fair amount of subscribers. I'm digging it.
Yeah, I was looking at it earlier in the week, and I was like, damn, you've caught up almost to me so far. But like, dude, like your videos, I mean, I watched the first one you did. It was the Something From Nothing episode one, where you're just kind of explaining like, hey, here's what I want to do. And like, I think someone that's starting off as a writer, an illustrator, someone just wants to know more about the comic book industry is going to love your content, because it's kind of the same way when we get to talk to Sequoia about stuff going on in his comic book store. And it's like, you get that insider read into it that you normally wouldn't get the chance of knowing. That's why, like, I think creatives and people that are in the industry doing YouTube or even just like live Instagram videos, we do that once in a while. We'll do a live video and show a printing process. It blows people's minds away. They're like, holy shit, I didn't know this is how it worked. Or they'll sit there and just watch the shirts being printed and just be memorized by it. Sequoia, you've been in comics for years, probably longer than I've been alive. Correct? Close to it.
About 23 years in the industry.
Wow. Okay, I'm 28, so yeah, not okay, that right long. On. But it's kind of like Comic Book Men when that came out. Did you see that like resurgence of people being like, "Fuck yeah, comic book stores," and you know, thinking they know everything about comics all of a sudden?
Man, yeah, for better and for worse, because I think when Comic Book Men came out, like, everyone, it's kind of like the whole Pawn Stars thing where people were coming like, oh, I got such and such, where are you going to give me for it? And it's just like, nothing, we don't want it. It's like, people think they're high rollers and they're like, we're going to be blown away. It's like, no, I mean, actually this collection you have isn't worth the damn.
Yeah.
It's not worth $1 million like you thought it was. I'm sorry to tell you that. No, nobody wants to buy your copy of Death of Superman, you know.
But if you guys did a YouTube channel where you show like behind the scenes of like, here's how fucking comic books actually, you know, a comic book store actually works, you know, it may not be TV worthy, but I think YouTube, like what Daniel and other artists are doing, dude, that'd be fucking, I would watch that.
I think that would be the most boring, depressing YouTube channel.
Just 8 hours of, just, you know, I don't know, I guess it's good. It's like Clerks kind of, you know, vibe to it a little bit.
There's a lot of dead area. No, I mean,
is this one good? I don't know. I don't watch movies, you know, that kind of shit.
I'm sorry. I was trying to remember. No, I mean, you know, working in the comic book store, I don't know. I mean, there is a certain fascination with seeing how the sausage is made. I mean, if you look at like the last decade or so of reality TV, I mean, you take shows, what was it, Dirty Jobs or whatever?
Yeah.
Like, normally, who would give a damn about watching a TV show about coal miners?
No one cares, right?
But it's fascinating.
It kind of, I always refer to that like Star Wars documentaries, behind the scenes.
Yeah.
most people don't give a shit how Jar Jar was made or the CGI, but I do because I was the weird kid that loved the prequels, and I still do. I'm sure people are like, "What? Get this fucking guy off the goddamn air!" But
no, dude, they have their own charm.
Yeah, they do. You know, and I saw some of your Star Wars stuff on your Instagram. We gotta talk about that, bud, because that shit's fucking awesome. You're like,
thanks, man.
My favorite one was the Boba Fett joint you did.
Oh yeah,
that thing is pretty dope. So let's talk wars real quick, because it always comes up. Everyone loves Star Wars, they either hate it. What's your favorite movie, bud? Or let me rephrase this, because I'm on the podcast now.
Yeah,
I determine the Star Wars rules as a Star Wars kid here, right? What's your favorite timeline, like Clone Wars, you know, where do you sit at?
Probably original. Well, okay. Definitely the original trilogy is number one, but I gotta give a shout out to the, I guess they call it the Legends now, like the Timothy Zahn stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all of the X-Wing novels, like post trilogy.
My man.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. That's the
also a lot of the Dark Horse comics from back in like the 90s and late 90s or early 2000s. Like, there's some great stuff in there that all dealt with things like right after Return of the Jedi. I just thought it was so great.
That universe, like, that's when I fell in love with Star Wars. I played Star Wars Galaxies from launch to close, and learning about, like, reading comics, like, there was a couple Bounty Hunter series that Dark Horse did. It's like little six issue runs, and those were my favorite fucking thing ever, because I love
those. Were great.
The Bounty Hunters, the Mandalorian, like before the Mandalorian movie came out, because, you know, that one of those dudes. But reading, spending hours in high school on Wikipedia and getting expelled because I can't do my senior project on why Mandalorian culture, you know, is the same to this culture, or why Wookiees really sound the way that, you know, no one fucking cares about that. But like, that was the cream of the crop, and then they just said, nah, that's all fan fiction, bud. Here's that, three more and, movies.
But I also have to give a shout out to my boy Cam Kennedy.
Yes.
Who did Star Wars Dark Empire 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Read that shit so much. I got that from the library and just like read it front to back a million times, copied all the panels. It was huge influence on me.
Dude, the colors in that book were amazing, weren't they?
Weren't they?
Yes, they were.
And you know what's so funny? So in Dark Empire 1, it's kind of like it adheres to like the original trilogy. Like, it has those vibes, you know?
Yeah.
And then when you get to Dark Empire 2, there's just these like wild like elephant mechs that are there. You, it like, it's crazy. It just goes all over the friggin' place, and you're like, what is happening? The colors get even crazier. It's all like green and blues. Oh, it's just incredible.
Yeah.
It reminds me of like some like crazy like space death metal opera almost. It's like if Nocturnus made their own Star Wars universe. It's like, this is
then, you know,
when
Luke has that like his collar is like a foot high over his head.
Yeah.
And he's basically wearing Darth Vader's clothes.
Yeah, I mean, I was blown away when I learned that Luke was like a Sith Lord for like an hour or some shit. And you're just like, you're blown away as a kid. You're like, and that's canon? Holy fuck.
Right.
That was my reintroduction to Star Wars, because I remember being in like, I think it was my freshman or sophomore year. My buddy Keith was like, yo, man, you seen this new Star Wars comic? Nah, man, they're making new Star Wars shit. Yeah, man, this new comic book, like Luke turns to the dark side of the Force. I was like, what the fuck?
Oh, yeah.
Mind blowing.
Yeah. So, I read that before.
Luke brings
read
down an AT-AT walker in that story, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, it's something that never happened in Last Jedi. It happened in Dark Empire first.
Yeah, right? I mean, it was a wild. I mean, it was kind of like almost like the Wild Wild West, too, for book writers and stuff. It was kind of like, you can do whatever you want. No one cared.
For better and for worse.
Because there was some shit where it was like, yeah, all right, okay, this is a little far, but, you know. I mean, my favorite book was the Tales from Jabba Palace series. I forget who writes it.
Oh yeah,
they actually explain here's what happened to Boba Fett after, and they all the bounty hunters meet up, are like, all right, we gotta fucking get this dude. And like, it was such a, that whole book could be like fucking four movies. And it's just such a bummer that, you know, so much work in history is, you know, to stuff that's irrelevant. You still go read the books and shit. But, you know, it's that weird thing where people, I only like what's canon, and you're like, oh, I mean, I guess, but it's all art. It's all still subjective to a certain matter, you know?
It's something that I miss about, you know, the kind of cowboy nature of all of the extra Star Wars stuff, because, you know, maybe like somebody might own the book rights, somebody might own the comic rights, somebody might be doing like a TV show. There'd be like random Japanese companies doing like one-off like Star Wars toys. And, you know, it made for this kind of like, even though we as Star Wars fans, or I as a Star Wars fan, I wanted more content that was like movie based. It was still felt exciting and new, and back in, you know, whenever before Disney got it, and now that Disney has it, you know, I don't want to poo poo it too much, but it does feel a little bit like a movie made by by committee or by like a bunch of suits,
like a CEO movie kind of.
No, man, let the hate flow. Talk that shit.
Let the hate flow through you, Daniel.
Yeah, let's talk shit on Disney right now.
Anger leads to hate.
It has its ups. It has its positives. You know, like I enjoyed The Force Awakens.
Same here.
Yeah, I wasn't one of those weirdo like anti Last Jedi people, but I didn't love it.
Same here.
I haven't seen Rise of Skywalker yet.
Okay, so now I don't feel weird for being such an avid Star Wars dude and be like, I haven't watched it yet. I mean, also, it's one of those things where, I don't know, it's just kind of weird. I was really busy during that time too, but like, a lot of people my age in the same boats with fandom, they're just kind of like, I don't know. It was fun camping out to go watch episode 3 or when they re-released the original back in theaters for like that weird month or whatever. But
well, let me ask this, because I feel like I should have asked this before we started recording. But, you know, Joel, I know you're 28. Daniel, how old are you?
I'm 33.
Okay. See, what you fellas don't remember.
You young kids.
Y'all remember that 12-year dark period where there was like, no Star Wars.
I could imagine that.
And it's funny, like, I mean, like a property like that had such an impact on, I mean, you know, my generation, your generation, and such. Like, I mean, just that place it holds in everyone's mind and heart. And then, like, you know, because I remember, like, you had Ewoks and droids, like those cartoons, and then there was just nothing. So just to hear any kind of news about anything Star Wars is just like, oh my god. You know, totally.
gotta take it in when you can.
All right, well, let me ask you this. Do you guys see The Mandalorian?
Yes.
Don't even get me started.
That feels to me like the truest Star Wars thing since Return of the Jedi, honestly.
That, oh man,
it was fun. It was simple, it was straightforward. You know, there were a few Easter eggs in there, a little bit of nod to the overall lore, but I mean, I just needed something simple that was still in the Star Wars universe that wasn't continuity heavy. It scratched the itch after, you know, the bad taste Rise of Skywalker kind of left in my mouth.
For me, it was a wet dream. I mean, again, like you can ask my parents. The moment they found out, they called me. They're like, do you know about this show? I was like, yes, I know. Do you want to watch it? We'll watch it. I'll go to Disney Plus. Don't worry about it. But this is something I've been wanting since I was in middle school. A show about fucking Mandalorians. I wanted the Sith and Mandalorian war. That's what I wanted, was to see, you know, 500 Sith, you know, going against, you know, all these mercs and stuff. But it was done so well. It's kind of like the Rogue One of this, I guess, year for Star Wars stuff. It was something that even I'll say old heads would be like, fuck yeah, this is what I wanted. Everyone's gonna deal with maybe the child and, you know, deal with that aspect of it, but it wasn't that. I mean, it was a prominent part of it, but I can watch it and be like, cool. I mean, yeah, there's a little weird, whatever that is. That's fine. You know, Star Wars is all...
Oh, you mean like the extra cuteness?
Yeah. Oh, no, I love the extra cuteness. That very good time period of all the memes and shit. And then, but it was just, it was a Western. It was this gritty, the first scene, totally. The dude getting cut in half. That would never happen to Force Awakens. That would never happen in a fucking, you know, outsourced or full Star Wars movie.
Nowadays. I think it's cool because, you know, Favreau was in charge of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And he was basically like, you know, I know for a fact, like, I was talking to a fellow Marvel writer who was like singing Jon Favreau's praises because Disney wanted to move all the production for Mandalorian over to London again or in England. And Favreau was like, I'm not leaving my family. And there are plenty of people who need work in LA. We're doing it here.
Damn. That's
and
cool.
He's, you know, he stuck to his guns and has made Disney so much money over the past however many years.
Yep.
You know, Disney was like, all right, okay. Sounds good.
I did you ever watch the Clone Wars? The full season?
Not the CGI cartoon, one?
Yeah, the CGI one.
I've never taken the time to invest.
You've got the time.
You have the time, yeah, right? Now, but no, so I believe he directed or wrote, he did one of the guys who did Mandalorian, he did all of the Clone Wars.
Oh, Dave Filoni?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I didn't know that.
And the Clone Wars really is kind of on par with the Mandalorian because it's not so much about, you know, they have the cute episodes where fucking Jar Jar finds himself in a, I don't know, fucking wherever Jar Jar's doing, but there's also episodes where Jar Jar's a badass. So he like fucking kills all these bounty hunters and shit, and you're just like, what the fuck, dude?
By accident,
but it took the... I mean, there's also Mandalorians in the show, too, so that's an added bonus, but it took the culture of what Republic Commando gave us in the video games of the clone troopers are not just clones. They're these, like, ragtag special forces dudes. Like, they have feelings, they have emotions that the movies didn't really show that, besides, like, Commander Cody and shit, but it made it gritty. They go into, like, genocide, like, suicide and shit, and, like... really the, drug use and everything.
The Clone Wars really fleshes out a lot of the finer details that get left out of the overall prequels.
Yeah. Makes the prequels good.
That's where it succeeds, I think.
Mm.
So if you got the time, dude, oh man. Especially the later seasons where they get into like going to the Mandalore, like the planet, and like they get into the culture of like the pacifism and the Death Watch. Oh, I can go on hours about this shit, but this isn't a Star Wars podcast, so
Well, dude, can we talk about Gundams a little bit, like building Gundam? Because you're really into that, right?
Oh, dude, that's all I do, bud.
Right
this,
on.
This is where I bow out. I'll just listen and nod.
So you can play the part of the non-Gundam person,
yeah, I mean,
who's listening to this right now.
I mean, that's kind of why I'm not a big comic dude, but like I love when that crossover happens of dudes that are into the shit that I am into and like. Dudes that are shit you're into Sequoia because like we get two different opinions on it and like thoughts and shit and so what was your first I hate when people ask me this question because it happens all the time, but I'm gonna ask you this question. What was your first Gundam model kit?
My first Gundam model kit, okay, let me think about it. It was, there were other like really cheap crappy ones that I had done like really quickly before this. So I'm not going to count those. My first legit one was the Master Grade Heavy Arms from Gundam Wing.
Hell yeah. And I think we actually were right before you got on, we were having a discussion about like our generation's comics and fucking Adult Swim and Gundam Wing and that really set it off. For you ask anyone in the States, it's either it was a Gundam Wing model kit from KB Toys or it was an 08th MST model kit that they like spent $30 importing it for some weird Japanese website back in, you know, the late 90s or whatever it was.
And I remember like Cartoon Network would put them on as Adult Swim shows, and dude, I remember like trying to see Gundam or anime any other way and trying to go to like the video store, and they were so expensive.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They were $100 for like the first five episodes or some shit. It was crazy.
Yep. And so I remember going to my grandparents who had cable. I didn't have cable growing up, so I would just like stay up till all hours of the night to see like a rerun, and I'd wake up super early to see another one. So Heavy Arms was always my favorite of that series. Yeah. And so I thought, hey, what better way to start than to do a Master Grade Heavy Arms?
Yeah, I mean, punishing yourself from the get-go is the way to do the hobby. I did. My first kit was a fucking real grade. Now, people listen, they're probably like, what the fuck are they talking about?
I'm sitting here wondering what the fuck you're talking
break
about.
Break it down for us, Joel. Yeah. Just real quick.
Real quick. Gundam or Gunpla, they're scale model kits, but they're not your dad's scale model kits, right? you don't have to glue them. They're pre-injected plastic, so they have all the colors. They come with stickers. You can literally take a box, get a nipper and then like an X-Acto knife, and you can build a pretty dope looking robot. And they have different grades, so like the high grade line is pretty user friendly. Your kid could probably make one with some help.
Yep.
Master Grade has an internal robot skeleton that you build armor on top of, and like the pistons move, and there's a pilot that sits inside. It's super detailed. And then the real grade is a smaller version of that that's made to torture humans. And I started off with that, and I hated it, and then I loved it. And it was a weird thing, but it's something that is so popular now, and it's fucking weird, because even when I got started into and got integrated with like the YouTube community and stuff, it was still a niche hobby. Bandai didn't give a shit about Gundam in the West. They're like, you guys like that shit? Well, I guess. Cool. Here's some Gundam Wing episodes. Have fun. Knock yourself out. And we're watching it as kids, and we're like, oh yeah, these are cool. Who's doing what? Okay, I guess that person's good. Now he's bad. Now he's pointing a gun at a girl. I don't understand what's happening in this fucking show, but it's badass because there's five main Gundams when there's normally one. Mm-hmm. And it's usually war and really gritty and stuff, and Gundam Wing just kind of painted this picture of like cool robots.
See, I remember when that show was on, and like I remember at the time, like I always referred to it as boy band Gundam.
Yeah, it was actually, so fun fact, it was actually made in Japan to target a girl audience. They wanted to get more female viewers into the show. And because, I mean, the first one from the 70s was just war.
Yeah.
And this one, there's never been a super, super strong, almost militant female presence in the anime. And Peacecraft, I believe that was her last name, she was that like pacifist that was like, I guess we can use big fuck off robots and kill everyone, and if it brings peace, sure. And there's a whole weird internal conflict. But yeah, it was Backstreet Boys, the mech show. You had the sassy one, you had the quiet one, you know.
Yeah. I just remember the visual aesthetic of like Gundam was so, you know, because I had seen Transformers, which is a huge part of my childhood. I love that too.
Yeah.
But this was a different level. This had some sort of like otherworldly aesthetic, because it just, you know, it was not made for Americans in any way, shape, or form. It was like Japanese audience only. And I feel like there was me and a lot of other artists growing up at the time that saw that, and we were just obsessed. We like couldn't get enough of it. And in some ways, you know, I still feel that way when it comes to Gundam, because the design is so unique. It's so weird, but it's so awesome. It's like it just tickles this part of me that, I don't know, it's just like a scratches a part of my back that I just can't reach myself.
Big beam saber back scratcher.
Hell yeah.
I mean, it is though. It's one of those genre defining things. I mean, there's other shows that have robots that people can pilot, you know, robots have them across, stuff like that. But it was something where it was almost so edgy and just kind of badass to see this dude have fucking four things open up and like 800 missiles come out, and all the missiles are animated too. That was the other thing, is that the animation for Gundam Wing, O8th MS Team, all that stuff was in that, for me anyways, that beautiful era of like dude spending 900 hours or some shit drawing two pages. You know, it was I think that whole Adult Swim anime all the ones they chose for the most part were so different from what we've seen in the States, it caused this like mass hysteria of, okay, we want more, we want more, we want more of this.
Well,
so let me ask you, Joel, what are you building right now?
Oh, yep. Sure am, bud. see, oh man, all kinds of stuff. I usually have some type of commission project that's going on, and then I have two or three personal builds. I mean, I'm sure you've seen on Instagram that the Gundam, the Gunpla hobby is very big on Instagram, and there's a lot of, like, especially right now with everyone being at home, there's a lot of contest and community build. Let's build the Gundam Wing stuff. Let's build 08th MS team, and companies give prizes. And I usually tend to stick to my theme of weird, frozen, weathered Gundams. And so right now I'm doing a weird SD kit, which is Super Deformed, which is a very popular style of Japanese, like, toys and manga and shit in the 70s and 80s, and then a little bit in the 90s. And they're just really short, fat, cute little
chibi.
Yeah, chibi Gundams. And like, but I love making them look badass and like satanic and evil and shit. And people dig that. So I'm always about it. But yeah, I'm doing a little, it's based off of the Devil Gundam from G Gundam, which was the wrestling of Gundam. I don't know if you ever watched that. They showed a little bit later on Adult Swim. It's literally that all the nations have their own representation of a Gundam.
Yeah.
So like there's Neo Tokyo, Neo Holland, and all the Gundams are if the country made the Gundam. So like Sweden is a big windmill. America is a huge boxer. Japan is obviously the most badass one, so it's not based off, it's based off the Rising Sun, but it's just
like a samurai
Gundam. Even there's actually the German Gundam is a ninja Gundam. It was a weird time for a lot of that shit too when they made it, but that's a great series to check out if you just want to see the obscure side of Gundam. But all kinds
of. Is it worth watching?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They've redid it in a Blu-ray, so it's like a nice, crisp animation. And that's actually, that series is pretty dark. they go into, like, I mean, it's, again, it's still a war. It's countries fighting for survival of their whole entire nation based off of a huge robot fighting another robot. Like, that's fucked, if you ask me. I mean, if we had a, you know, American representation for a Gundam, I'm moving to Japan. Because I know we can't compete. We can't. Their Gundam is currently walking right now for the Olympics whenever that happens.
What?
They are working on a 1-to-1 scale walking RX-78. You can go to Tokyo or Tokyo Front and see the huge, and they're 1-to-1 scale. So like real, quote unquote, real life, they have the Unicorn Gundam, and it transforms from its normal mode to the destroy mode. And before that, they had the original Gundam. It was, again, 1-to-1 scale. They said, we want it to walk. And there's if you go to on YouTube, go to Gundam Info, look up the Olympic project video. They have like 5 or 6 videos, and you actually see it starting to have the hydraulics and all that shit. It is wild. It's fucking awesome.
Wow. That thing's weaponized. I'm telling you, like, secretly.
I mean, but that's to kind of show you like how big it is in Japan.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a predominant, it's Marvel for Japan.
Yeah.
How Marvel is to us. And now this is where I heard you say fellow coworker or fellow friend that works at Marvel. Let's go into that a little bit. This is where I all right, Sequoia, you're in.
Oh, what?
Tag. All right, go you.
What?
I don't know. I mean, what have you? So, what are some of the Marvel stuff you worked on? Like, how's your experience like with all these different? Because I looked you up. I did a little bit of research, and you've worked with a lot of different companies. Like, I think Dark Horse Image,
Image,
Marvel, and DC.
Yeah, you're doing that Wonder Woman Dead Earth right now, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's been my main gig for the past. So I've been working on that since about June of last year.
Okay. And the first two issues are out already.
Yes.
And before the crap
and
hit the fan.
Third issue. Yeah. I don't know when the third issue is going to come out. It's all done. I'm working on issue 4 now, but we're not sure when issue 3 is going to come out. I hope it comes out eventually. I mean, I'm sure it will, because they've spent too much money on the project already. But some crazy crap goes down in the end of it, so I really want people to read it.
Oh, okay.
That's wild.
And as far as Marvel goes, you know, I haven't done too much with them. We've almost done a bunch of different projects, but things haven't necessarily worked out just because of timing issues, things like that. Mm. I did do a one-shot of that character, Quake.
From S.H.I.E.L.D.?
With, like, yep.
Yeah.
That Matthew Rosenberg wrote. And then I did a really fun project where I did a string of Cable covers. Usually Marvel just has me on to do like variant covers.
Yeah.
Which will still be a one-off here, a one-off there. But I was able to do like 5 main Cable covers, and that was like a dream come true.
Dude, that's okay. I fuck with Cable. That's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
So I saw some pictures when do you do like a lot of conventions?
I try and do about 4 or 5 a year.
Yeah.
I try and do the staples like San Diego, where I don't have a table or anything. I just go and I just interact with people, meet with different publishers, you know, have dinner with writers, artists, things like that. Connect.
Yeah.
I try and go to the West Coast at some point, whether it be like in California or Seattle. I try to go to the East Coast, and that usually ends up being New York Comic Cons. And then I'll try and go to like one show that I haven't been to before in like a different part of the country.
Kind of test the waters a little bit.
So last year I went to Minnesota, and this year, I don't know where I'm going to go. Probably nowhere.
Do an online convention or something, you know?
Yep.
Well, let me ask this. Is there a character that you're like kind of really itching to get your hands on, like, as far as either writing and or drawing?
Yeah, writing and drawing Beta Ray Bill would be awesome.
Really?
I love Beta Ray Bill.
Like a single issue?
Joel, do you know who Beta Ray Bill is?
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
I was like, sorry. Beta Ray Bill.
Beta Ray Bill. I guess he would be the second person to ever... God, it's kind of a long story, but I guess it's from the 80s. Like, he was this alien that got a hold of Thor's hammer.
No shit.
Yep. Yeah, and he became, I guess, his planet's version. He got imbued with the powers of Thor.
Damn.
Yeah.
But when he first shows up, he's an alien.
Yeah.
That basically, I don't know, he gets into a tussle with Thor for some reason. And Thor's like, yo, back off, bro. And then Odin comes over and he's like, yo, this guy might actually be worthy of the hammer. You guys should fight for real. And then whoever wins gets to pick up the hammer and be the new Thor.
Yeah. Well, what's so funny is, like, in his normal alien form, like, he looks so plain and unassuming, but like when he becomes Thor, like, he's this crazy horse face looking creature.
I think I've
when
seen
he first
him
shows up, he's like this crazy, he looks like a crazy horse face dude. With the body of like a man and like a horse face. Yeah. And then you find out later that he's cursed for some reason. And, you know, his true form is revealed later on. And he's like, he's a good guy. But, you know, when he first shows up, everybody's like, holy shit, who's this horse face guy who's beating Thor up with his own hammer?
Yeah, he looks kind of scary. But yeah, Beta Ray Bill is cool. Like, I'm really hoping he's going to be in this new Thor movie.
That would be cool. So I do know who he is. I didn't know that was his name. I remember seeing images, and there was a Marvel legend or select figure back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck is that? Like, what kind of weird side story bullshit? I need to read this. But he fights. Man, imagine your dad being like, yeah, fuck, I don't know, you two guys fight, and whoever wins is my son now. Have fun! You know, like, what the fuck, dad?
But if you didn't have Beta Ray Bill, I don't think we would have ever had the whole Jane Foster
like the different,
as Thor.
Different Thors.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think the only time they've ever explored that was, like, I think there was a what-if issue where Storm got a hold of Thor's hammer, and she became the Goddess of Thunder.
What?
I was mistaken. Was it What If? I can't remember.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
It sounds bad. I mean, if there isn't one, you should write it, because that sounds fucking badass. Like,
But wait, after all this talk about Star Wars, you're telling me you wouldn't want to go play in that sandbox and with the Star Wars
no
comics?
No way, dude. Are you kidding me? Bro, let me tell you, Lucasfilm has an iron grip on the way that comics are made.
Damn. Yeah, it's kind of sad.
Damn.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's getting to the point now where they want it to look so specific that they're just asking artists to use Google SketchUp models and drop them in.
What?
Yeah.
That bums me out, so, man. You know,
I've been very frustrated with the Marvel Star Wars comics. Like, it's just like they usually have about, the exception being all the Darth Vader series. Like, those have all been fire.
The Bounty Hunter ones, the new Bounty Hunter joints.
Mm-hmm.
Some of, like, the grittier ones I kind of like, but they're not. I mean, I guess let's rephrase that question that you asked.
What's that?
Let's rewind back to the Wild Wild West version of Star Wars, where books were canon, the extended universe was the Bible. What are you writing, or what are you illustrating in that weird universe? What would you want to work on?
Because,
like, now it's fun. Like, Disney just does Disney movies, Toy Story, yeah. They're not in Star Wars land. Yeah.
If we were going back to that golden age of, like, Dark Horse, anything goes, I would do one-shots. So, like, a series of one-shots. So, like, a six-issue series, but each issue is its own story, and each one would cover a different C-list or D-list Rebel pilot in the Rebel Alliance from the original trilogy.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you'd have one about Dak, who's like Dak, like, you know, he spills beer on Luke and he can't fly in formation right, so he breaks somebody's S foils. We got a story about Porkins, who's trying to prove that he's more than just his weight the entire
thank you as a big guy. Yes. I relate with Porkins.
I know that gif of him with the fried chicken makes me crazy. I hate it.
Dude,
and he's such an awesome dude, you know, and I just would love to get into his head, and he's like a really talented pilot. Like, I've done my research, yeah. You know, they didn't just throw him in that cockpit because they didn't have any bodies. Like, he was good.
Yeah. And then,
I want to do one about Grizz Fix. I think he's the only other black guy in Star Wars other than,
oh, wow.
The ice cream machine guy.
Oh, Will Rod Hood.
Or Lando.
You know who I'm talking about? Grizz Fix in Return of the Jedi. He's in an X-Wing. He turns around as his ship is exploding.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
She's gonna blow.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Wow.
They're kind of doing that with a TIE Fighter comic that's coming out, but it's not that. Dude, I'm a huge Imperial scum and villainy, Death Watch, Black Sun. Like, I fuck with the bad side of that universe.
You're a space fascist.
Yeah, I guess. I've shit. But if there was a comic book talking about these, like, rebel special forces pilots, especially the A-Wing pilots, those dudes are fucking crazy because they're going in high speed. They're fucking just like, hey, fuck you, X-Wing, you guys suck. And they kill shit. I would love to read that.
So, speaking of A-Wings, I did like a... So I kind of knew this about the Lucasfilm culture when it comes to, like, comic books, and I more or less have avoided that. You know, I've pitched them some ideas here and there, but they never really take off. And yeah. I know that even if I was able to do them at Marvel, you know, no offense, Lucasfilm, but I just know you'd come and you'd bomb the shit out of my art style. So I did a fan comic, just like 11 pages.
Yes.
It's called Green Leader. And I just made it for fun. And it's about the A-Wing pilot that flies into the Super Star Destroyer at the end of Return of the Jedi.
Oh, nice. What? I didn't even know about this one.
Where can I?
Oh, yeah. It's a bootleg thing.
Can I meet you behind a Arby's or some shit and get a copy from you, bud? Because that sounds dope.
I hyped Joel up because I was telling him about your old man Skywalker.
Yeah.
Right on.
You know, story. And I was just like, yeah, like... Because I saw the art from that. I was like, oh my God, I want one of these. This is so badass.
Dude, that sounds awesome. Fuck.
So, and because Lucasfilm is like, or Disney, you know, they're like Skynet now. I only bring them with me at shows.
Okay.
And then it's just donation based. So people just, I'm like, hey, you can have it for free. You can have it for a buck. It's whatever you want to pay. So it's kind of almost like this handout, and people can choose to pay me if they want. And it allows me to kind of fly under the radar. It keeps it special. It gives people a reason to come visit. And I've done multiple versions of these different fan comics. I've done, so Old Man Skywalker, Grain Leader. I did one called Cherno, which was about the Russian Jaeger from Pacific Rim.
Oh, shit.
I did one called Martok, which was my favorite Deep Space Nine character, General Martok from Star Trek. And then I also have done one about Jushin Thunder Liger, who's one of my favorite wrestlers. I'm a big pro wrestling fan.
I don't fuck with wrestling, but I know who he is, like the Sentai wrestler kind of dude, right? He has like the crazy red and white. Oh yeah, I remember seeing the art on your page, and I was like, oh, what is this? And I kind of looked it up a little bit. Dude, oh my God, I'm going to get up with you about getting some of these, because these sound fucking awesome.
So you're a very broad-based nerd. Yep.
Yeah. You fucking nerd, you look all kinds of shit.
Oh, dude, I get into it all, bro. Like, I'll mark out at a wrestling show with the best of them, man. I'll make some Gundam. Man, I'll do some twiddly-widdly licks on my Shredder guitars.
Yeah. How do you feel?
I'll get down with that YouTube crowd. I'll get down with Star Wars. I'll get down with Beta Ray Bill. Come on.
How do you feel about dudes in suits? Like Sentai, Godzilla? Are you a fan of that kind of stuff?
So I really appreciate it, but I have never had someone who has been able to like guide me through the world just because, you know, it's so deep.
Yeah.
It's not in English, not the Godzilla, like the original Godzilla stuff, but like there's nobody who's into it who can say, okay, watch this one, but don't watch this one, watch that one and don't watch that one. If you know what I mean,
you're in the right place, bud.
Yeah. I was going to say, you're talking to that guy right now.
I mean, Danny, the owner, he can walk you through. I mean, the best of Kaiju and Godzilla films. And I think with the stuff you're into, you would really fuck with Kamen Rider and Super Sentai. It's a kid's show, but like it was, especially in some of the Showa era stuff, it was gritty. There was guns, there was blood, there was drugs, like, and it was during the Japanese superhero happy hour fun time block. And you're, you come in, you're like, okay, shit, you know. Well, Kamen Rider's got,
I know,
a full
there's
pistol.
One this there's an artist, a fellow artist in comics. Oh my gosh. I can't remember which one. He commissioned me to do from that kind of genre. I don't know what it was called, but it was a guy that when he would punch people, he would actually like punch people with the power of the earth. So the earth would like show up on his fist and he would punch people like with a planet.
I don't know that, but I'm on board. You sold me. I mean,
yeah. Dude, it's a deep friggin' cut.
That scene's
but
badass.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to know the character and the artist who requested this.
Yeah. Well,
hold on. I'm going to look it up.
While you're looking that up, the big thing with a lot of the older Super Sentai and Japanese tokusatsu stuff is that if you like Gundam, you'll kind of like this because it's in that same category of five robots coming together to make this one big robot, but it's all piloted by five complaining teenagers like Evangelion, you know. It's like, you're like, just go in the robot and fucking save the world for the 18th time this week. And it's just like, it's one of those, it's so cheesy but it's not, but it's great. I'll walk you through it, but
so
we'll go
the
down
artist that commissioned me this was Jordan Gibson.
Okay
Yeah,
he's at Gibson Comics on Instagram. He's a fantastic artist. He does a bunch of stuff for like Power Rangers and everything, so He's big into that genre of TV show, kind of like the Japanese Super Senton kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh, shit. I'm looking through his stuff now. Oh, yeah. I see his Masked Rider. And wow. Yeah. He's got a lot of really cool shit. Yeah, this is dope.
It's really neat
stuff. It's kind of nice because, I mean, all that stuff is having a resurgence now.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Mm.
For me as a kid, I mean, I think it was just that thing. Like, I was, you know, constantly bombarded with stuff like Super Friends and the Christopher Reeve Superman movies and the Adam West Batman series. But like that stuff from Japan just had such a strangeness to it. I mean, that's what made it so appealing, because it was just so
different.
So yeah, it was just
different.
It was so alien. And I mean that in a positive way.
Yeah.
That just made it seem so exotic. And it's, you know, it had this mysticism to it, you know. Yeah. I still find it appealing and whatnot.
It's, I find myself going down rabbit holes of behind the scenes of these Toei properties, or I mean even Star Wars shit too. Like just learning what they put into it for this like 5 second clip of a robot transforming was hundreds of hours of work from so many different fucking people, and that kind of you know shroud that we didn't get to see with Power Rangers, we didn't know that was just recycled Super Sentai from a show that's been out for 20 some odd years or some shit there. That stuff really, we don't have that now. No one's taking Japanese property and like retangling it so much that we don't realize it's, you know, this show from, you know, from the 80s or some shit.
Totally.
But it's coming back now, because again, like my generation is growing up being going, oh fuck, you lied to us? The Power Rangers weren't real? The only thing that was real was the weird movie they did where they're all shiny and shit. Okay, I guess, you know, that's fine. And then you go down rabbit hole and you 3 o'clock in the morning watching weird Japanese Super Sentai videos about toys and all that. That's my rabbit hole. I'll be 4 o'clock in the morning and watching Kamen Rider toy reviews that I can't understand what's going on in them, but I fucking love it. And it's amazing. I think right now is a shitty time, but it's a good time for people to find stuff they fuck with.
Amen.
It's happening. I'm fucking with comics more. I've never been a big comic book dude.
Start with Murder Falcon.
Yeah. I'm buying that shit tonight. I'm gonna meet you behind the Arby's. We're gonna get those old man Luke. I'll pay you whatever you want, bud. Because that sounds fucking awesome.
Hell yeah.
So we're kind of coming to a close here, but dude, anything you want to plug? Your YouTube channel, your website. I mean, unless Sequoia, did you have any other questions?
No, man. This was a
This is a podcast.
We covered it all.
We did it. We talked about
the riffs, we did cover it all.
The riffs, the mechs, and the inks.
The force.
And the brain powers. The force, the midichlorian, and the hammers. Yeah. No. I learned that there's a horse Thor. Now I know his name, and his name is kind of fucked, and I didn't realize that was his name, and now I love it. Now I want to go read all his fucking weird comics. So dude,
and it's aged really well. Like the origin of Beta Ray Bill is done by Walt Simonson, and that guy is a friggin' legend.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Oh, I'm stoked. So plug all your stuff, man.
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Daniel Warren Art. If you just Google my name, Daniel Warren Johnson. it's a long thing to Google, but you won't find me if you Google Dan Johnson, believe it or not. And then I do have a new YouTube channel. It's called Something from Nothing. It's just me trying to dive into the challenges of making things and celebrating just how magical it is, like being able to work off of a blank page and turn that into something, and trying to inspire others to do the same story wise, script wise, art wise. I'm just inviting people along that journey. And so we're doing some concept art. We're doing some looks into like how I draw my pages. I'll be doing like tutorials on like perspective and how to do composition, things that'll help people tell a story better. So if you just go to YouTube and just look up in the search bar, Daniel Warren Johnson, you'll find me. And I hope you check it out.
Fuck yeah. And you know what? I'm going to send you a Gundam kit to work on. And maybe I'll find something that I have and then get you a second copy and we'll do a little Gundam build together.
That would be fucking awesome.
I think that'd be dope. I love seeing people that aren't into the hobby get into the hobby, and then I just force feed them all these kits, and then they have a backlog, and they're like, I don't want to do this hobby anymore. I have too much shit. everyone listen, if you want to find those links, they will be on our website at holymountainprinting.com. Go to our article section, and there'll be all kinds of links to all of Daniel's stuff. And then we'll throw some links to buy some of the comics we talked about, like Murder Falcon and
Extremity
and all kinds of new shit you have coming out. So I just want to thank you so much for having you on the show. Hopefully we might have you back on. We'll talk some more nerd shit. It was a blast,
that'd
man.
Be awesome. Totally. Thanks again for having me. It's been a great time. I love talking about this nerd stuff, so
for sure, man. Have a good one now.
You too.
Take care.
Holy Mountain Printing Podcast.
Listen to this.